Coming up on Broadway Videos, this week on Broadway, we talk with Carrie and Wayne Kirkpatrick about their hit show, Something Rotten. Afterwards, we predict and discuss next Sunday night's Tony Awards. Please stay tuned.
Like who? Like who? Like Decker!
Woo!
John Webster!
Woo!
Ben Johnson!
Broadway Radio, this week on Broadway for Sunday, May 31st, 2015. My name is James Marino, and in the broadcast this morning, we have Peter Felicia and Michael Portantiere. Peter is a theater journalist and historian with a number of books. His most recent is The Great Parade, which is available everywhere. His columns appear at MTI, Critcherland, Masterworks Broadway, Broadway Select, and many other places. Good morning, Peter.
Good morning.
So you have a busy week in front of you here. You have Theater World Awards tomorrow night, 7:45.
Right, at the Lyric, yeah.
The Lyric, and then Tuesday you have the Barnes & Noble book signing.
Right, up at 82nd and Broadway.
Up Broadway.
I hope to see many friends there and friends to be there, and we'll see what happens. But I've been practicing my jokes for tomorrow night. We'll see how they land.
Excellent. Also with us is Michael Portantiere. Michael is a theater reviewer and essayist whose work appears at Talkin' Broadway, the Sondheim Review, and Broadway Stars. He is also a theatrical photographer whose photos have appeared in the New York Times and many of the major publications. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning.
With us this morning, we have two very special guests. Carrie and Wayne Kirkpatrick are with us. They are the team that have put together Broadway's smash hit of the season, Something Rotten. And I can't really give you any Broadway credits other than Something Rotten, because these folks have invaded us from the West Coast and thrown up such an incredibly hysterical, funny, traditional musical theater show that we hope wins everything. So, guys, thanks for getting up on a Sunday morning and joining us.
Yeah, no problem.
So, I was doing some research and reading about your development in this, and this was pretty quick. You guys had an idea, threw it together, and it was up on stage really fast, right?
Yeah, 18 years.
Yeah.
So tell us about that. Yeah, it was the 90s you guys had this idea.
Yeah, I think I was in third grade.
Wait, for our listeners, why don't you identify which voice is which?
It's not going to matter.
Okay.
You're not going to be able to tell us apart. I'm Carrie.
And I'm Wayne.
I have
just a little bit more of a southern accent.
Yeah, Wayne lives in Los Angeles. I mean, Wayne lives in Nashville. Sorry, I live in Los Angeles.
Southern California gives you that accent, you know?
Well, Wayne, we're both from Louisiana.
Louisiana, yeah.
But I shed my accent so as not to be ridiculed on the streets of Southern California.
So two boys from Louisiana came up with a musical theater idea?
Yeah. We, in fact, probably shortly after leaving Louisiana, not that the two are connected, we went to this high school. It was a magnet school called Baton Rouge High School that had a really fantastic arts program.
There it is.
And theater. We both kind of got our start in musical theater. And did a lot of shows then and always loved it. So had always, you know, wanted to write one of these and attempted to write one right out of high school that was called Stages. And it was not good. So we thought, as we continued to kick around ideas, this was sort of back in 1990, I don't know, one, two, three, somewhere in there. We were always kicking around ideas. We wrote a couple of screenplays together. And then Wayne, this idea kind of bubbled up somewhat organically. We can't really remember the inciting incident of the idea.
There was a lot of casual conversations about if we were going to write a musical and what would it be about. And we would, I mean, really, maybe sometimes we were together just a couple of sentences of, hey, wouldn't it be funny if we did you know, something like Shakespeare and two brothers and, oh, you know, maybe looking into the future and seeing Shakespeare's greatest work, or little things like that. Oh, that would be funny. Yeah, we should write that one day, you know. Yeah. And then next time we would get together, we would kind of embellish that idea a little more. Hey, what if they went to a soothsayer and did, oh, yeah, that would be funny. We should write that one day.
I wonder if – was Nostradamus alive then? No, he wasn't alive then. Oh, maybe it could be his nephew. Yeah. Oh, yeah, that would work. Yeah. Okay. So I'll see you next year.
Yeah. That went on for about 15 years.
We had these other careers that kept getting in the way. Wayne was starting his songwriting career, and that was going well, and then he was producing records, and then I was doing movies, and but it would literally be like, oh, hey, I'm going to finish up this movie. Maybe we should work on that musical. And then I'd finish. He'd be like, oh, I just started a record.
Yeah.
Like, well, how long will that take you? About a year. So, oh, okay. Well, let me know when you're done. And he'd let me know when he was done. And say, well, I just started an animated movie. Oh, how long that's going to take? 4 years. Oh, okay. And on it went until about 2010 when we finally said, if we're ever going to do this, we have to carve out some time. That's what we did.
And that was 2010?
Yeah, the middle of the summer of 2010, we kind of decided let's do this. And I had known Kevin McCollum since we worked together at Disney World.
Oh my goodness.
Yes.
As what?
I was Mickey and he was Donald. No, that's not accurate.
No, that was the fantasy.
It's just, it's getting late in the season. I'm starting to make up stuff just to amuse myself. No, I did improvisational street theater at Epcot Center, and as you do. And Kevin did a show called Broadway at the Top, which was a Broadway review at the Contemporary Resort Hotel. And we met there, and then we both went to USC Film School at the same time. And Kevin appeared in my student films as an actor, because he started as an actor. And then Kevin also, I got a job at Disney Animation writing musicals there. And Kevin would come sing my demos. And Wayne had met Kevin around the same time, just coming out to L.A. and visiting.
Yeah, just because, through the friend connection. Yeah.
And he invited us to see Rent. The week went to the final tech rehearsal of Rent, and we told him then, we have this idea for a musical. And he said, the door's open, and it took us about 15 years to go through the door.
Yeah.
But we finally called him one day and said, what do you need? Because we didn't quite know, did we need to write the whole thing? Did we need every song? And he said, Avenue Q was three songs and an idea. And we said, oh, we got that.
So, before we jump in further, can you tell us about your magnet high school? What was the name of it? Does it still exist?
Yeah, Baton Rouge High.
And it was like a college prep school of sorts. Mm-hmm. So you had to declare a major and maintain a grade point average, you know, 3.0 grade point mm-hmm. average in your major. And I know I declared, this is Wayne, I declared theater, music theater as a major.
Performing arts.
Yeah, so we both had that as a major and were involved in the theater all through high school.
Yeah, I saw Wayne do, when I was in junior high, I saw Wayne do 1776.
Mm. Playing whom?
I played the courier.
Uh-huh. Oh.
Sang Mama Looks Sharp.
Mama, hey. And then...
but that school, to tell you what that school was like, we did that production with a full orchestra because our school had a full orchestra program too. So,
wow. Oh, I'm getting a lump in my throat. That's awesome. Yeah. How long ago? And that was the 90s.
Oh, no.
No.
It was 1970.
That was in the 70s.
Well, maybe you can go out for the role when they do it at Encores next year.
Yeah.
Oh, are they?
Yeah.
I love that musical.
Yeah.
All right. Now, was there any type of
angst involving the fact that you were working about Shakespeare, which after all is not necessarily a Broadway favorite. His shows tend to run about 137 performances. Were you worried that people wouldn't get Shakespeare or care about that era? Anything like that ever come up?
Yeah, a little bit, but that's why our version of Shakespeare is, a slightly more irreverent. I mean, the early part of the pitch was, what would it be like to be a writer in Shakespeare's London? And how terrible would that be? And to be like, and we all have kind of a Shakespeare in our lives. Yeah. And so we thought, that'd be funny. You're coming on the heels of Romeo and Juliet has just opened. And it's like, it back then we thought would be like the Avengers open to them, or Avatar, you know, and it's like, and we always thought Shakespeare's like a rock star. Mm-hmm. You know, it's he's the Brad Pitt of his day. He's the Mick Jagger. And so then that started to give us a different way into Shakespeare. And there was also all of these conspiracy theories that he didn't write everything, and that he stole. And we thought, well, that's good. And one of our early ideas was that of these two writers, one of them, the most insecure one, is actually a genius and is actually Shakespeare, is actually writing all this great stuff. And so that when they go and get a glimpse into the future, and the hook was always, they, you know, the future of theater is predicted as is going to be musicals, and that we would do a song that's about how ridiculous it is to break into song in the middle of a play. That was one of our early concepts. And that song, a musical, was one of the first that we wrote. But it was also allowed us to mash up, because they want to know what Shakespeare's greatest hit is as well. And so it allowed us to mash up musical theater tropes mixed with a mashup of Shakespeare. And in the early days, we used to mash up every bit of Shakespeare that we could cram in there. So it was a bit of Hamlet and a bit of Midsummer Night's Dream and a bit of King Lear. And
but to speak to your question of fear of dealing with Shakespeare, we had determined that we didn't want Shakespeare to be in the title of our show, whatever. For many years, we didn't know what to call the show, so
it was called That Shakespeare Musical.
Yeah.
All right. Michael and James will bear me out on this, but I went to a workshop and I came back and I raved tremendously.
Absolutely.
You know, I was a big fan of the show from way back when. I'm curious to know how the out-of-town tryout was canceled. Was this something that you said, we don't need? Did Kevin come to you? What happened? And how did you feel about it when you realized you weren't going to Seattle?
Well, that lab that you went to, which was back in the fall of 2014, which was over at New 42.
Right.
That was, you know, for those who don't know, we had done some table reads, and we had done a thing called a 29-hour reading, which is where the actors stand with music stands. And we try out different people in different parts. And most of them are friends of Casey Nicola, our director. And when Casey brings in friends, they're all Tony Award winning. But at the lab, we had a cast. And in particular, we had landed on Brian D'Arcy James, Christian Borle, Brad Oscar, John Cariani. As our kind of four core guys, along with most of the ensemble, and a couple of pieces of casting changed between there and Broadway, but our core group worked so well together, and we weren't quite sure if Christian and Brian would be able to go out of town. So the fear was that if we went out of town and didn't have these people, we weren't quite sure what we would learn, because they had been so successful, and something really clicked in that lab where everybody felt like, you know, this is, I think we're pretty close. And around the plan was up until December, just this past December, that we were going to go to Seattle. But calls started going around and said, look, if a theater becomes available, we might go for it. And so we were just sitting around going, oh, well, okay. And it was this weird waiting game, the whole waiting for a theater game, which is kind of terrible because when you're waiting for a theater, it means something's about to close. And we don't wish that on anyone. These things are too hard. And so it's sort of like, you know, there's something kind of bittersweet about, hey, good news is you got a theater. And then, you know, the bad news is it means the show didn't make it, which only increases the pressure on you because of how many musicals open and then don't quite work out. And
to not be able to go do it out of town. I mean, for us, it was like you do realize we've never written a musical before.
Well, you could have fooled me. I mean, now all of a sudden I'm interested in stages because, everybody has to go through stages like that. So the thing is that I felt you were ready to move the next day. I said to these guys, all they need is costumes and scenery because I thought it was really in such amazing shape. And I go to a lot of these things. I've never seen one that was so fully realized as this one was. So I was crazy about it from day one.
Well, I'd like to share a story about the title. I was saying I didn't quite realize until a few weeks ago that there was an exclamation point at the end. And then I thought, I thought, you know, I don't know if it's really necessary and if it's like really perfect for the tone of the show. And I mentioned that. And then the next day I was sitting in a restaurant and I know someone who works on the show and he came in and handed out a bunch of buttons, pin-on buttons that say embrace the exclamation. So I don't know if those were done for my benefit specifically.
We had lengthy discussions about the exclamation when we landed on the title, Something Rotten, which was a couple of years ago, I guess, maybe.
Yeah, it was like, because we were just sitting around because it was called the Bottom Brothers for the longest time. And everyone said, yeah, I don't think that title's going to fly for various reasons. But we were sitting around and Kevin, me and Kevin and Casey and Wayne and John O'Farrell, our co-writer, and just talking about titles and started kicking around Something Rotten and go, well, wouldn't it be funny? It's like, what are you seeing on Broadway tonight? Something Rotten. Or what did you see? I just went and saw Something Rotten. And then it has the Hamlet reference. And so it all worked. But so we wrote that on the title page and we got a call. It was like, no, it has to have an exclamation point.
Interesting.
In order to say comedy, in order to say. And we were like, isn't that a little hyperbolic?
And I think the three of us writers had dinner discussing the titles because there were other options for titles. And then we discussed Something Rotten and discussed the exclamation point at length. For you know, it really became a point of possible contention.
But then it pointed out to us some of our favorite shows have exclamation points.
Yeah.
Oklahoma. And I think Fiorello has an excellent.
That's right.
You know, all these things where it's.
So like, you must be twice as enthusiastic about I Do, which has.
Yes.
Well, the other thing about Something Rotten is I've heard several people call it something's rotten.
Yes.
And I was what is the actual quote in Hamlet? Is it something is rotten in the state of Denmark?
That is the actual quote.
Yeah. Something is rotten.
You know, they had a very similar conversation in the production of Driving Miss Daisy. They wanted to put an exclamation point at the end of it, but they never got to it. Did you ever think about adding the term something rotten exclamation point, the musical, to let non-theater goers know that it is a musical, or did you just...
Well, by the way, we're working on the musical of Driving Miss Daisy, and it's just called Driving!
Exclamation point.
That's absolutely not true.
Hope not.
I'm sorry. I was only preparing the joke.
ending with the musical, Something Rotten, the musical, to let, you know, for marketing purposes, to let folks know that it was a musical or.
No, I guess, no, we never really thought to explain or tell people it was a musical. I guess maybe we should have done that.
I think that usually happens with adaptations, so I understand, you know. So, and that's one of the great achievements that you've done. You've written a show from scratch. That happens so rarely now, so we are in your debt that you did that.
And that is the most rewarding thing, I think, sitting in the theater and going, hey, wow, this just existed in our puny little heads a little while ago, and now it's here and people are coming to see it, and it's you know, it's funny, I've been a screenwriter for 28 years. This is the first original idea that I've had realized.
And as I said a few weeks ago, I don't, not to spoil anything, I won't, but so these two guys, they go to the soothsayer to try to help them see what the future is going to be. And then soothsayer starts predicting all of in the future of theater, what's going to be the next big thing. And it's Brad Oscar, and he's absolutely brilliant. And he gets everything like wrong, some a little wrong, some really, really wrong. But then he says he predicts something, and it sounds so ridiculous that he questions himself, and he says, wait, no, I can't. That's like, yeah, that's it.
We always defined Nostradamus as a satellite in a rainstorm.
Yeah.
And you know, you're watching it, and occasionally a picture comes through, and it's like, oh, there it is. And then, but there's a lot of fuzz, or in these days, digital noise. But that's what he's like. And he's 80%.
Yeah.
Mm. So we all know that Broadway is a business, and it is a tough business. And as you mentioned, you know, sometimes you need to wait for a show to close for you to come in behind it. And you two, having come through Hollywood, where, you know, you got to do whatever you need to do to get things done. Is it true you tried to throw somebody off the roof of the St. James? what happened there?
We saw Birdman and went, oh, there's an idea.
Okay. So that's an option.
Yeah.
So what were you doing on the roof of the St. James?
No. We've actually never been up there.
No.
There were days, because during previews, everything was kind of going swimmingly in rehearsal, and then kind of the last week of rehearsal, they come in and go, you know what, it's too long. Everything was, you know, it's a comedy, and Casey just kept going, I'm telling you, I know in my bones that Act 1 cannot be longer than an hour and 10 minutes, and Act 2 must be under an hour, and preferably 55 minutes. And we were at an hour and 16 minutes for Act 1 and an hour and 5 minutes for Act 2, and it was like, God, that's a lot of stuff to cut.
Yeah.
And we're so naive, we're like, I mean, to cut 4 or 5 minutes, that's a song. Hey, wait a minute. So at the last week of rehearsal, we used to have a song that the character Nigel sings called I Suck, which was one of the first songs that we ever wrote about his insecurity. And it was funny, and we always thought it was so crucial to get to know who this character was, and they suggested that we cut that out of Act 1, and it was like, no, you're kidding, and then we cut it and replaced it with a song that used to come later, and it actually, we couldn't deny that it worked really well, and you didn't lose anything from the character, because you already knew that's the way he was playing it, so.
The hard thing, too, was, like you say, you know, at the going to the lab and it seeming like everything was in pretty good shape, which is why they wanted to go straight in. And so we thought, being the naive, novice, first-time theater writers, we thought, oh, well, our part is done. We don't have that much to change, you know. And until we got into previews, and then it was, you know, it was like, wow, we have a lot to change.
Yeah, we changed a lot, especially in Act 2, once we got into previews. And then 3 weeks into previews, there was another song that was in, a big power ballad. And the suggestion came up. It's like, yeah, I think that's slowing it down. I think we have to cut that, too, and replace it with something. And that was a particularly dark day. And then a lot of it is about transitions and things that weren't quite tracking. And can we take that song and cut it down? And so we were writing every single day. And the most comical was, there's a, you know, the scene, the show ends in a courtroom, and there's a ballad that's being sung, And it was, the ballad used to be in a different place, so the bridge needed to be repurposed lyrically. And literally, we have a show that night. It's about 4:30 in the afternoon. They're restaging the scene, and Brian D'Arcy James is humming the bridge.
And Casey's saying, the lyrics will be here any minute.
Ah.
And we were in the back row and then ran up with our computer and said, how about this? And Brian read it and goes, okay, and then kind of sang it twice. And then Casey said, you'll do that tonight? He said, yeah, I'll do that tonight. And we were like, wow.
Well, this is just like Smash.
Well, it must be so tricky because I know we've all heard stories about shows that apparently went really, really well in workshops and development and really extremely well. And everyone was convinced they were going to be a hit. And then just slight mistakes were made, you know, those can snowball and sometimes – Steel Pier is the one that leaps to mind. There was incredibly positive buzz about that. And then just something, you know, they didn't make the right cuts or they didn't make cuts or they added thing. I don't know. But so it must be so, so hard to know exactly what to do in a case like that.
Yeah, it is. And you don't. And then you worry. It's like, did we go too far? Are we overworking it? You know, do we need to back up? And there were a few times where we did something that we tried something and it didn't work. And then it was like, okay, go back to what it was the night before.
You know? That was the only night, actually, I will say that, because I have done a lot of long form stuff, and it's amazing how much writing musicals is like writing for animation, because there are many iterations in an animated movie, and you screen it, it kind of, you storyboard it, you put it in front of audiences, you're constantly working it for a long period of time. So you know, I did have some experience in looking at a long form piece and being able to zoom out while you're zooming in as well, and so you always get this sense in your gut of, am I going, is this a step backwards or a step forward? And I will say, pretty much every step of the way, we kind of felt like, you know, that does feel like it's better, that's better. Except this one night when we completely redid a big number in Act Two, and we all left and went, well, that was a step backwards.
That was horrible.
And let's go back to the old one and rework the old one. We overcorrected in a big way. But, you know, only one audience saw that.
Yeah.
It also helped that we were in the hands of such experienced people who were sort of, you know, that we were putting our faith and our trust in, and that was Casey and Kevin and the cast. You know, all those people have been through this before, and so listening to our actors, following their instincts, it was actually just a very, very, very good, positive, joyous experience.
And collaborative, very collaborative,
In all the best possible ways. It's an amazing cast, an amazing group of people to work with, everybody on the same page, telling the same story. And they genuinely are having a good time up there. And I think that's the comment that we get the most, is that, you know, the cast really looks like they're having fun, and they are.
Yes.
The Kirkpatrick clan, how excited is everybody? Are they all coming up for next week's festivities? And do you have brothers, sisters, aunts, uncles, everybody under the sun calling you for house tickets?
We had a huge, the weekend after opening night, our father put together a group of
160 people.
Yeah. Long lost relatives.
You won the lottery and they all called up.
Yeah. Neighbors that we were supposed to know, but we only knew when I was 2 years old.
Yes.
You know, I mean, it was a huge group of people. And so
what's great about, because we've talked about this, Wayne and I have both done things that have gone out into the world. So either movies or songs, and then you get emails or messages on Facebook saying, oh, I saw your movie, or I heard your record, and really liked it. And that's, you know, so, but it's not as immediate. Like, the St. James Theater is the only place you can see Something Rotten right now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So anyone that we know who wants to see it, and they've literally just bought plane tickets and come from all corners of the country to see it, and we're standing there.
Yeah.
And we're supposed to have drinks with all of them. What's remarkable, it's really getting expensive. It's fantastic that they show up in the theater and you just get to watch them watching it, and you get to experience it with a crowd every night. You know, someone could be watching a movie of mine right now or listening to a song of Wayne's, and we have no idea. But when someone's watching Something Rotten, we're there watching them watch it. And that is the coolest thing about live theater. And it's a different show each night.
Yeah.
So you get to see when the shows are on and when they're off. And the family support has been overwhelming.
Oh, yeah.
It's just great.
And our kids are just over the moon about it and have been, they've been living with this. I know my kids have heard these songs for the past 4 or 5 years, and seen it through all its development. So I think they're just as excited as we are to see it realized and, see the actors portraying these songs, because we would sing all the demos ourselves. So,
it's actually bad when the kids know it so well, and then you call up and they go, "How did rehearsal go today?" It's like, "Well, we cut Lovely Love." What?
Not that one.
What? It's like, okay, you might not be privy to why we did this. You need to kind of keep your reaction. Now you're going to depress me again. I've just worked through this.
Well, I have to tell you, the friend I brought to the show is an actor, but not a musical actor. But every time I have seen him since then, he starts singing, "Welcome to the Renaissance."
Great.
So that's a good sign.
That is a good sign.
Well, thank you so much. We were only supposed to go for 10 minutes. We're on 30 minutes. But thank you so much for spending so much time with us on a Sunday morning. You have a few things to do this week, I'm sure. Getting ready for the Tony Awards next Sunday night. And
shorts.
Yeah. What are you wearing? I'm wearing Gap.
Yeah, exactly.
If I could, I would.
Oh, so we wish you the best, and come back and tell us what your next project is when you're working on it, okay?
Right. 20 years.
Book of Mormon 2.
Excellent. We'll speak with you soon.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.
Musical, a musical, and nothing's as amazing as a musical, with song and dance and sweet romance and happy endings happening by happenstance. Bright lights, stage fights, and a dazzling chorus. You want to be great, then you gotta create a musical.
I don't know. I find it hard to believe people would actually pay to see something like this.
Let's just say it's a Saturday night and you want to go out on the town. Got a lady to flatter who might give it up if you don't let her down. You could go see a tragedy, but that wouldn't be very fun. Or a play from Greek mythology, see a mother have sex with her son.
Ugh.
You could go see a drama with all of that trauma and pain. Or go see something more relaxing and less taxing on the brain. Go see a musical, a musical, a puppy piece releasing all your bluesicles, where crooners croon a catchy tune, and limber leggy ladies thrill you till you swoon.
All right, so next Sunday night is our, our Super Bowl, as they say in the Broadway community. Our Super Bowl is, of course, the Tony Awards. And so we're going to do some predictions about what's going to happen next Sunday, or maybe not predict, but say what we like the best. Either way is fine. Just let us know what you're doing. So let's start off with best performance by an actor in a leading role in a play. The nominees are Stephen Boyer, Bradley Cooper, Ben Miles, and Bill Nye, and Alex Sharp. So Peter, why don't you start us off with this category?
Well, I guess the smart money is on Alex Sharp for playing the autistic boy in Curious Incident, and that would be fine with me if he came home with it. However, I think Stephen Boyer is awfully good in Hand to God and has more to do, because not only does he have to give his own performance, he has to give the performance of the puppet, the evil puppet who was influencing him. So just the fact that he's manipulating the puppet, that he had to learn how to do that, I assume he did, making the puppet's arms thrust out and do all sorts of things. I would like to see him win even more than Alex Sharp. It's not that I like Alex Sharp less, it's that I like Stephen Boyer more.
All right, Michael, what did you think?
Peter, it's interesting the way you phrased that, because I think both roles are very, very challenging in different ways. It's certainly true about Stephen having that entire extra exceptional talent in manipulating the puppet and switching back and forth between the voices, which is very, very difficult. And there are many people who are extremely talented in every other way who just couldn't do that, I'm sure. But on the other hand, Alex Sharp's role in The Curious Incident, I think, is a marathon in terms of the number of lines, and also his very skillful display, his communication of the character's autism. And also there's a lot of yelling in it, as there is in also in Hand to God. Mm-hmm. So I don't know that I see that much of a difference in terms of more to do or difficulty. I think it's different types of difficulty. And I think both of them are so deserving of the award that if this was one of those rare occasions where a tie occurred,
I'd be very happy.
Yeah. I think that would be wonderful. Yeah. I think that Bradley Cooper was excellent in The Elephant Man, but it just, despite the star status, that it seems so long ago that it ran and that it closed. And Bill Nighy is phenomenal in Skylight, but I just don't think he's going to get it. And Ben Miles in Wolf Hall, I thought he was good, but I thought there could have been more range in the role. So I would not vote for him personally. So we'll see.
So back when we reviewed Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime, I told Alex to get his tux ready and come up and get his award, and I'm going to stick with that, although Stephen Boyer is amazing, and Hand to God seems to be getting a lot of buzz and a lot of momentum, and Curious Incident may have opened up so long ago that it doesn't have the buzz, so I would like Alex or Stephen to win it. I won't be sad if either one does. A tie would be great.
But this is a year where this is happening. I mean, I have found by talking to people that so many people say, well, if X gets it, I would have preferred Y, but you can't deny that X is terrific. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is the most competitive year we certainly had this century. And granted, there are 85 years to go, but still, the fact remains.
As she says in Ragtime, more or less.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the thing is that you have to understand that it's that great a year. So I bet we're going to hear a lot of this today as the three of us talk. You know, we'd love to see X, but it's fine as Y. So let's continue.
The best performance by an actress in a leading role in a play: Geneva Carr, Helen Mirren, Elizabeth Moss, Carrie Mulligan, and Ruth Wilson. So, Michael, why don't you start us off with this category?
Well, this would be a perfect example of what Peter was just saying. Everyone in this category was excellent. I think that Carrie Mulligan was superb. I think that I would vote for her, but I wouldn't be – well, I did think Elizabeth Moss, although it was a highly creditable performance in that very marathon role, she was a little disappointing to me in terms of her stage voice. I didn't think she had the kind of voice that sounds as good in the theater as it does on television. But I would be happy to see Ruth Wilson or Carrie Mulligan or Geneva Carr or Helen Mirren win it.
All right, Peter, what did you think?
this is going to be Helen Mirren's prize because Broadway likes to acknowledge somebody that everybody has heard of in the hinterlands. And so I think this is the closest category we have to a slam dunk. Though I have to say I admired Carey Mulligan's performance in Skylight far more than Helen Mirren's. Mm. I do think Elizabeth Moss is out of the running because her show is too, and was one of the quickest closings of the season. So, but Jennifer Carr and Ruth Wilson, obviously, I'm in their corner because Theatre World Award winners tomorrow night, they'll be there accepting their prizes. So so they're quite wonderful as well. But I do think the let's give the viewers somebody they know will give it to Helen Mirren.
I agree with Peter that I think that it's going to go to Helen Mirren, and it's, a tough category.
And it is an extraordinary performance in many ways, including the many transformations she does in terms of age during it.
Yeah.
All right, next category is the best performance by an actor in a leading role in a musical with Michael Cerveris, Robert Fairchild, Brian D'Arcy James, Ken Watanabe, and Tony Yazbek. So, Peter, back to you.
Well, again, a tough time. I do think that Mr. Watanabe is out of the running because of the thing we've all heard since the first preview, that he was hard to understand. Michael Cerveris certainly is very moving in Fun Home. I'm just wondering, with this big push that American in Paris, the big surprise hit of the season, if indeed Robert Fairchild is going to get it, could very well be. My personal choice would be Brian D'Arcy James for Something Rotten, who is so exasperatingly funny in this show. But Tony Yazbek, who I've known since he was at the Cincinnati Conservatory of Music, is so excellent in On the Town. And this may be the way that Tony people reward On the Town, by giving it to him. So, but my personal preference is Brian D'Arcy James, and yet I think it's going to go to Robert Fairchild.
Hmm. All right, Michael, what do you think?
I guess if I had to pick a personal preference, it would be Michael Cerveris, but I loved Brian. I thought everyone in all these categories was
exactly.
Great.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see. As we all know, sometimes there are years when it seems like there are juggernauts, where a show has starts building momentum, it starts winning awards early in the night, and then that seems to carry along others in the show. And then there are years when that doesn't happen. So if it does happen, in fact, with American in Paris, that might help Robert Fairchild a lot. But Tony Yazbek has been justifiably praised for his performance for ever since the show opened. And did you guys see I think it's a recently released video of him walking around New York singing Lucky to Be Me. And it's it's so well done, as was their original video campaign for the show.
Yeah.
With three guys running around modern day New York. So I think they did an excellent job with those videos, and they can only help everyone's fortunes.
Well, also helping, I think, would be the fact that the cast album of An American in Paris came out. And for any of us who say, well, this Robert Fairchild, he's a ballet guy, he sounds really good on the album. Mm. Really good. And voters certainly got that album. So that may be a factor as well.
All right. So I'm going to stick with Brian D'Arcy James in another tough category that could go to really anybody here, but I think that Brian's going to come through. And I think that while American in Paris got a lot of nominations and seems to be a juggernaut and there's a lot of buzz about it right now, I think they're going to come home with a handful of awards. I don't think they're going to sweep the night like the producers would.
No, but 3 months ago, would any of us have believed?
No.
No.
Yeah, exactly.
The same night that I saw American in Paris, after I saw American in Paris, I still can't believe they got so many nominations.
It really is one of the great surprise hits of all time.
Best performance by an actress in a leading role in a musical with Kristen Chenoweth, Leanne Cope, Beth Malone, Kelly O'Hara, and Cheetah Rivera. So, Michael, why don't you start us off here?
Well, Kristen Chenoweth is brilliant in a bravura performance in a very, very, very difficult role. I think that she will probably get it. I loved Kelly O'Hara in The King and I. Some people have said that they don't feel that it's one of her best performances. I disagree. I think it is one of her best performances. Cheetah Rivera is one of the greatest musical theater stars in all of all time. I think this production of The Visit is very flawed, and that may impact on her being chosen for the role. And as for although I thought Beth Malone was wonderful in Fun Home, I just don't know if that's the kind of role that necessarily wins awards. And Leanne Cope, I think is lovely, but I don't know. I don't think she's going to get it.
All right, Peter, what do you think?
It's definitely Christian Chenoweth. Certainly if there's an upset with Kelly O'Hara or Cheetah Rivera, with the sentiments feeling that this is Cheetah's last show, which may not be true, and she told me it won't be, that's another story. The only one who I feel doesn't belong in this category is Beth Malone, not because she isn't wonderful, but because I don't feel it's a leading role, really. I don't think she's on stage. Well, she may be on stage, but I don't think she does that much in the show. I was surprised to see her there in this being nominated, but and good for her, you know, but I don't think she has much of a chance. No, it's really been a race among the other four, but because Kristen hasn't won in this category, I think the Tony voters want her to win in this category. She won the supporting category for Charlie Brown. She lost in Wicked. Some have said that the best performance she ever gave was when Idina Menzel won the Tony for Wicked, and she looked happy for her. So as a result, I do think this is Christian's year. So,
all right, I had not heard that. That's very funny. So I'm agreeing with you again. I think Christian Chenoweth is going to win it. She deserves it.
She's terrific. Yeah.
Everybody knows how much I adore Kelly O'Hara, but I think Kristen's going to win this category. Mm-hmm. Right. Best performance by an actor in a featured role in a play: Matthew Beard, K. Todd Freeman, Richard McCabe, Alessandro Nivola. Did I get that right?
Mm-hmm.
Nathaniel Parker, and Mika Stock. So, Peter, take it away.
Is it Mika? Micah. Yeah, I think so. There has been so much talk about this category that certainly K. Todd Friedman was able to stand out among so many characters in Airline Highway and so many disreputable characters, not actors, characters in Airline Highway, that it's hard to get noticed in a play like that, and yet he did. But I think it's going to be Micah Stock. The chain is as strong as its weakest link. What's the parallel expression to that? I don't know. But the point is, there he was in a star-studded cast. Mm. You know, one Oscar winner, one Golden Globe winner, 6 Emmy winners, 5 Tony winners, and yet he held his own. So I think that that's going to be something that's going to be very much appreciated. And as somebody who discovered that's not fair. I didn't discover him. Somebody who saw him 7 years ago in Dayton, Ohio, in community theater. I'm very impressed with his journey. Not that Tony voters necessarily know that, but I think it's going to go to Micah.
Not only do I think he held his own with that cast, I think he gave one of the best performances in the entire show. Partly, I think, because his material was so good, but he's absolutely hilarious and brilliant in it. So I think he will get it, and I hope he gets it. I was surprised to see Matthew Beard nominated. Not that he wasn't wonderful, but it just seemed with all of the people.
Beth Malone factor. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I really did not like Alessandro Nivola as Treves at all. So if he should win, which I doubt, that would disappoint me.
So I'm going to agree with the two of you that Micah Stock is going to win this category. So best performance by an actress in a featured role in a play: Annalee Ashford, Patricia Clarkson, Lydia Leonard, Sarah Stiles, and Julia White. So Michael, take it away.
Yeah, when I saw The Elephant Man, I had commented that I liked Patricia Clarkson as in terms of her acting, but it really bothered me that she was the only one in the cast who didn't do a British accent, especially since she's playing an actual historical figure in the British theater. And the more I think about it, the more actually it bothers me. So I don't think she's going to get it, and I would not say that it would be right if she did. There was tremendous buzz about Annalee Ashford, and deservedly so. While You Can't Take It With You was running, everyone seemed to love her, and me too. So I think it's going to be her.
All right, Peter, what do you think?
Ever since I started going to the theater, I kept my own list of bests. And one of my dear friends, David Wolfe, God rest his soul, dubbed them the Quaminas, because Quamina was a musical in 1961-62 season about an African man who went to England and changed his name to Peter. So that's why he called them the Quaminas. Anyway, the Quaminas, I have to say, split plays into dramas and comedies. And for me this year, with one day left in the season, my best actress in a play is Lydia Leonard for playing Anne Boleyn in Wolf Hall, because she was so interesting. She was a tough lady. We never see her portrayed that way as really, really, even after she had Elizabeth, the child, the girl, which she failed, she still was fearless. And so that really impressed me. God knows some of that's the writing, but still she realized that very well. My best actress in feature role in the comedy is Annalee Ashford. So, I mean, both of my selections are here, and I think they're both – the other Julie White and Sarah Stiles, of course, are comedians extraordinaire, and we love them dearly. I won't be surprised if it goes to Lydia Leonard, because Wolf Hall, after all, is such an ambitious effort, and I don't think it's going to get very much, and I think it will be acknowledged for something. So I think it may very well go to her. But of the two, even though they're both winning Quaminas, which I'm sure that will be in their bios for the rest of their lives, I do think that Annalee Ashford is going to get it. It's very hard for me to tell again in this category, because I would say that whichever of those two names is pulled, I'm not going to be surprised.
Speaking of Lydia Leonard, just quickly, have either of you watched any of the TV version of Wolf Hall?
No.
Because it's interesting.
You?
To well, I happened to be flipping channels, and I tuned in just when it was leading up to the beheading of Anne Boleyn, so I had to watch to the end. And it is interesting to watch, the difference, the different performances, and also obviously the film as opposed to stage. It's really very interesting.
Mm-hmm. All right, so I think that Sarah Stiles is going to win this. I think Hand to God's getting a lot of buzz. I think she has a very good performance, and she is working the Tony vote.
Oh, is she?
Uh-huh. And I think it's tough for Annalee Ashford, who had an outstanding performance in An Okay Show, and she doesn't, really have.
And also, it's closed.
It's closed, exactly. So I wouldn't be surprised if Annalee Ashford won, but I really think Sarah Stiles is going to win it, and I think is deservedly so.
Interesting.
Well, to be fair, much of what I said about Stephen Boyer applies to Sarah Stiles too, who has to deal with a puppet as well. Not as much as Stephen Boyer, to be fair, but still quite a bit. And mastering that puppet is something that it can't be easy. So, it's fine with me if she wins too.
All right, let's move forward into the next category, which is Best Performance by an Actor in a Featured Role in a Musical, where we have Christian Borle, Andy Carl, Brad Oscar, Brandon Uranowitz, get that wrong, and Max von Essen. So, Peter, why don't you take that?
I am going to be so fascinated to see if indeed it's going to be Christian Borle or Brad Oscar. It may be neither one of them, of course, but can Brad Oscar win this category by essentially having one song? But it is the the biggest song on the show, and it is the one that's going to start the Tonys. Have I heard that correctly? His number is just phenomenal, and I think he is amazing in it. You may recall when I saw Something Rotten way back when, I predicted that both these guys would be nominated, as well as John Cariani. I thought he was going to be in this category. That didn't quite happen, and I'm sorry, because I think he's wonderful, too. I've known Brandon Uranowitz since he was a child. His father used to bring him by the Star Ledger and taught him. So I bet if he wins, he'll certainly thank his father. And if not, then we'll know they had a Culkin type of split, but we'll see what happens there. Everybody in this category is very worthwhile. I think Brandon, by the way, is terrific in the show, and so is Max von Essen, playing the reluctant man who's supposed to marry somebody whom he doesn't want at all. And Andy Carl is terrific in On the 20th Century. Certainly this role has a history of winning Tonys, because the last time it was on Broadway, Kevin Kline won for that part. And maybe there will be some sentiment, because Andy Carl was so good in Rocky, and many people feel he should have won last year, and he didn't, so there may be some sort of sympathy going on there. But I don't think it's impossible that with that one number, not unlike Beatrice Straight in the Oscar many years ago in Network, she only had 9 minutes, and yet she won the prize. I wouldn't be a bit surprised if Brad Oscar is the one who wins on Sunday, and it's fine with me if he does.
All right. Michael, what did you think?
Well, I mean, to be fair, that is his one number, but it's not his only participation in the show. He does come back, I think it's one of those things like the Wicked Witch in the movie or the Wizard of Oz, where he's so good that you think he's in it more than he is.
That's a very good point, Michael. Yes, I see your point there. That's excellent. Yes, I agree.
But, he's so terrific. I think everyone in this category is utterly deserving. I would say that... In one sense, Brandon Uranowitz maybe doesn't have as much chance because his material is not as good as the other people. But on the other hand, for him to be that good in the role anyway is obviously says a lot for him. Max von Essen, I think both Max von Essen and Andy Carl have been somewhat underappreciated to this point. And so I think it would be wonderful if either one of them won, too. And Christian Borle is also – I loved him in the show, but I think he's more openly appreciated.
the fact that he's won already is going to be against him. I agree.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we'll see.
So I am thinking that Brad Oscar is going to win it. I think that Something Rotten is going to, we have two shows in this category, Something Rotten and American in Paris, that might split vote, but I think that Something Rotten is going to come out as a much more recognized than American in Paris is this evening. And so, we'll see if Brad Oscar wins it. I think he's great.
Well, I certainly hope that in like the best musical category that they don't pick. I really hope American in Paris doesn't win for that. I don't think it should be a show with old songs.
And we will get there. So the best performance by an actress in a featured role in a musical, Victoria Clark, Judy Kuhn, Sidney Lucas, Ruthie Ann Miles. So Michael, start us off there.
Skaggs. Don't forget Emily Skaggs.
Oh, did I?
Oh, yeah, her too.
Emily Skaggs, that's right.
Mm-hmm. She was probably on the other page of your computer screen. Well, I dislike Gigi so intently that I can't see Victoria Clark winning, and I wouldn't be happy if she does. Also, I think that the role has been puffed up so much that it's obvious, and it's not. It's really not well written, and it just seems like it seems to have been made into a star, like a star turn that it shouldn't have been. And I'm not sure how much she was responsible for that, but I don't think that I would like to see her win. Judy Kuhn, who was away from the theater for many years, I believe for family reasons, mm-hmm. isn't that correct?
Yeah.
It's so wonderful that she's back. She's so great in the show. And again, it would sort of be, as Peter said, somewhat like the case with Brad Oscar, where mm-hmm. she would basically be winning for her beautiful performance of that song at the end, where it's we don't really see all that much of the mother in the show in Fun Home. I mean, not that much time is spent on her until then, when it all comes out, when her feelings all come out, and it's a really, really beautiful moment. Sydney Lucas, you know, a beautiful performance by a very young star. I mean, how can you even? It's one of those apples and oranges things, you know. How can you compare a performance of a brilliant veteran like Judy Kuhn and someone like Sydney Lucas? The other two, Ruthie Ann Miles and Emily Skeggs, just very, very strong work also. So I think that it will be Sydney Lucas for the win.
All right, Peter, what do you think?
Again, a very tough category, but I'm going to go with Judy Kuhn. I think she has the best chance of this because of the fact that she's an old pro, and I think she'll forgive me for saying the word old, but pro is the – you need the word old next to pro in this situation, because certainly there she was in chess and I mean, so many other shows too. So I think that's going to work in her favor. I think the feeling will be that Sydney Lucas and Emily Skeggs, wonderful as they are, and both of them will be getting Theatre World Awards tomorrow night, will be seen as people who will have their chances in years to come.
Yeah, yeah.
I think the Victoria Clark nomination was throwing Gigi a bone. And Ruthie Ann Miles in King and I, tremendous sensitivity in playing Lady Tiang. But I think that Judy Kuhn's years in the trenches and years away from the trenches and being able to come back and come back so strongly are going to result in a Tony Award.
I do wish there was some way that Sydney and Emily were not competing against each other. Although, on the other hand, it's wonderful that they've both been recognized.
Yeah, yeah.
So.
All right. I think that Judy Kuhn's going to win this category for the reasons that you guys have already mentioned.
So. And on second thought, I think you're both right.
Who knows? Who knows? Who knows? As Jerry Herman once wrote.
All right, let's go jump over to the Best Original Score, Music and or Lyrics Written for the Theater, where the nominees are Fun Home with music by Janine Tesori and lyrics by Lisa Krohn, Les Ship with music and lyrics by Sting, Something Rotten with music and lyrics by Wayne and Carrie Kirkpatrick, and The Visit with music and lyrics, music by John Kander and lyrics by Fred Ebb. So, Peter, why don't you give us the star here?
Tonys enjoy making history, and it will be history when both Lisa Krohn and Janine Tesori, two women, win the Best Score Prize. That's never happened. There certainly have been women, especially Betty Comden, who have won in conjunction working with men. But two women, music and lyrics, has never happened, and I think the Tonys are going to want that to happen tremendously well. And by the way, the score is terrific. I mean, it's not as if it's just like, well, right, you know, we better do this feminist move. Not at all. But the idea that these people represent so many of the female songwriters of the past, the Kay Swifts, et cetera, et cetera. And I think this is going to be an award given as a strange type of lifetime achievement to all the women writers we've had in the theater who didn't get the prize or even predated the Tonys, but was still working. So, so that's where it's going.
Michael, what do you think?
Yeah, I have very similar feelings. It's wonderful when something like that happens, and it also is deserved, mm-hmm. you know, because I hate it mm-hmm. when something like that happens and it isn't deserved. Mm-hmm. But really, that show is so wonderful. It's so beautifully written that I would be very, very happy if they win. I love the score for The Last Ship as much as I dislike the book. mm-hmm. And so it's too bad that it probably won't get this recognition in that sense, but I don't know. I hope that show has some kind of another life. Maybe somebody can rewrite the book someday. I'm almost tempted to do it myself, to be honest. If I thought that, you know, that anyone would ever look at it. But it doesn't have to be me, obviously. I just think there's so much there in the score and it didn't work with the book. I love the Something Rotten score. I think it's a completely delightful. I'm so glad that it's great that these guys came on to be our guests today. I thought they were charming and great, and I think their work is magnificent. And I also am someone who, you know, really appreciates a musical comedy. which I guess even in the wake of the producers, I guess maybe there are more of them than there were for a while there, but so many shows still are so heavy, and a lot of them not in a good way and very ponderous. And this one is a complete delight from beginning to end. And so I applaud them. And if they won, I certainly would not be remotely unhappy. I'm sorry that The Visit has been given such a problematic production, because I think the score is better than it has been given. But I do not think it will win best score.
So tangential to our entire conversation right now is that we did have official word from the production of The Visit regarding Roger Rees, that he has left for a medical reason with no return date. That has been scheduled, but we wish him well. Yeah. And we talked about it for a little while last week, so I wanted to mention it. I am going to agree with Peter and Michael that Fun Home is going to win it. And I think that Fun Home is really good, but I think that the Tony is going to split, as we'll discuss later on Best Musical, because I think that Rotten will win Best Musical, but Best Original Score and Book will go to Fun Home. But we'll see what happens there.
We will.
But, and also one thing is that I've been having these little interviews with the other podcast producers, one-offs in the middle of the week that some of the listeners have heard. And Jeanette Tesori was on the Theater People podcast last week talking with Patrick Hines for about an hour about the development of Fun Home. And if you're a fan of Janine's or of Fun Home, you should listen to this podcast. It's really, really interesting, and it's a great interview.
Let me also say that I have been to classes that Janine has given to young people, and she is so wonderful in the way that she gives criticism that it doesn't even sound like criticism, and she gives praise that really sounds like praise. She's terrific with young people, and I think it's really great that she shares her expertise, knowledge, and accomplishment with them and does it so winningly. So she seems to be a terrific teacher as well.
Great. Best Book of a Musical, we have Craig Lucas for An American in Paris, Lisa Krohn for Fun Home, Carrie Kirkpatrick and John O'Farrell for Something Rotten, and Terrence McNally for The Visit. So, Michael, why don't you start us off here?
Well, I would say that Craig Lucas's book for An American in Paris is is probably the only nominee this year in any category that is completely undeserving. I think it's a mess, and I think that the show has become a hit in spite of it. I can't quite believe that someone with his credits wrote that book. And I think that's really unfortunate. So I hope that doesn't win, and I really don't think it will. The other three are all excellent. For those of you who know the play of The Visit, I think that Terrence McNally did a really wonderful job in the adaptation. And this is coming from someone who really doesn't like his non-musical theater work. But he really knows how to write a libretto, no matter what it's based on. And Something Rotten, I just think, I was kind of worried about it going in, because it did sound to me like it was going to be, haven't we seen this all before? But even though the general sort of meta approach and sort of making fun of musicals while celebrating them at the same time, even though we have seen that before, the specific situations and jokes in this to me are just so fresh and brilliant that I loved it. I loved every minute of it. Although, it's interesting to say, I just want to bring this up briefly. It seems like a great many people are in disagreement with all three of us on this podcast about that show. It seems like many people don't like it in general, and also a lot of people say that they think the second act is a big letdown over the first. I didn't feel that at all. But for what it's worth, if that many people are saying it, I guess there must be
something to it.
Well, don't forget, too, that Ben Brantley didn't think the first act was any good either.
Yeah, oh, so. Yeah, good point. Yes. Yeah. So it is. And these are and these people I'm talking about are, I mean, a lot of them are really knowledgeable, respectful.
Absolutely. You know. Absolutely. Yeah. Yes.
So whatever. But Fun Home, I do not know the source material. Apparently it's beloved. Those graphic novels. Is that what they're called by Alison?
Mm, yeah.
But I do think it was turned into a beautiful musical, and I'm so happy that and somewhat surprised, but so happy at its success at the box office, not only with the critics. I think that's a wonderful thing and a really, really good sign for the musical theater.
All right, Peter, what do you think?
I hope it's something rotten because these guys started from scratch. Everybody else had something to work with. I don't agree with Michael in terms of An American in Paris because I'm looking at the glasses half full. I hate the movie so much that I think
me too.
that I think Craig Lucas improved it. Yeah. So I thought there were far more compelling ideas in the musical than there in the stage musical than there are in the original Oscar-winning film. I think that's to its credit. But, you know, the other two, really, that graphic novel is pretty much on stage. And The Visit seemed more like an editing job, and very skillful. Absolutely. I agree with Michael there. But I do believe that something rotten starting from scratch should be recognized. And yet I do believe it's going to go to Fun Home.
And as an entirely original piece, yes.
Yeah.
How often, you know?
How often?
We could probably list.
Oh yeah.
You know, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's really very rare and to be celebrated.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're all in agreement here that I think that Fun Home is going to win it, and I would be happy if Rotten won it. But I think that Fun Home is going to be given this category because it's not going to win Best Musical, but we'll see what happens. So in the Best Revival of a Play, we have The Elephant Man, Skylight, This Is Our Youth, and You Can't Take It With You. So Peter, start us off.
You can't take it with you, I think, because there are so many people involved in it on stage. We don't usually see plays revived if they have big casts. And certainly the producers of You Can't Take It With You took a big chance here in having such an expensive payroll. And for the most part, it paid off. I don't necessarily mean financially, but I do mean that it paid off in terms of giving us a delightful evening. I think it's the clear winner.
Michael.
It's this category is interesting in that both The Elephant Man and You Can't Take It With You were directed by Scott Ellis. And I think in one case, You Can't Take It With You, it seemed like the direction was excellent. And in The Elephant Man, in my opinion, it was very, very lacking. So if it were going to be one of those two that would win, I would hope it would be You Can't Take It With You. This Is Our Youth, I thought, was very well done. Very, very well done, especially in terms of the acting. But I guess it's just partly because it's closed and it's such a small show. I don't think that's going to win. And Skylight is superb. Superb revival. But I think that it might be that one.
It might be Skylight?
I think it
would very well be. Yeah. A tough year.
Tough.
I think it's going to be Skylight. Because it's open, it's running, it's got a lot of accolades, and the other three are closed. So
I do think it's fantastic what you said about You Can't Take It With You, that classic play was given such another great production. I saw the amazing one with Jason Robards and Elizabeth Wilson, the dear departed Elizabeth Wilson, and Colleen Dewhurst, and it was I couldn't imagine ever seeing anything better. I don't know if this was better, but I would say it was pretty close. And to have a classic like that still work so well and be given such a with such a large cast and given such a great production, I think that's a beautiful thing.
In the Best Revival of a Musical, we have The King and I, On the Town, and On the 20th Century. So Michael, why don't you give us your opinion?
This may be, is this the hardest of all categories?
Yeah, it is.
Okay, all right. I think I'm going to just leave it at that.
I don't know what else to say. They on the 20th century, I don't think anyone ever thought that they would maybe see it on Broadway again at all, because it always had a legend of being so so challenging in terms of the tech, the train set, et cetera, et cetera. And again, you know, and then that leading role, as I think we've said, it's the role of Lily Garland is, you really need somebody who's not only brilliantly talented, but has a tremendous amount of stamina. And they found that in a person who was already considered a pretty major Broadway star. And now, that has helped put them over the top, and just generally very well done overall. On the town, God, I mean, that beautiful orchestra and the incredible choreography. It's too bad it couldn't have been in a smaller theater, but there you have it. And The King and I, a brilliant use of the Beaumont in terms of the direction and the set design, and strong, really strong performances all around, and a beautiful production of one of my two or three favorite shows ever. So I guess maybe I would lean towards it for that reason, but I don't know how anyone could even vote in this category.
Peter, what do you think?
Well, to me, King and I seemed more business as usual, and that's not a complaint. I mean, it does the job extraordinarily well, and if it wins, you won't hear a peep out of me of complaint. Having seen the two previous Broadway revivals of On the Town, I felt this was the best of the three, so as a result, I was in its corner there, and that's perfectly fine with me, too. But I think it's going to go to 20th Century for some of the reasons that Michael gave, that we didn't expect it to be done again. It's a tough show to do, not that On the Town's any picnic either. King and I'm telling you, this really is the toughest category, but given that I have to choose, I will say it's going to go to On the 20th Century.
I think that it's going to go to The King and I, because
there's been a lot of talk about it lately too. I mean, I will say that the push has been for The King and I. Going.
Oh, really? Is that your impression?
Yeah, that's my impression. Yeah, you too, huh, James?
Yeah, I there's just a lot of. I mean, everybody when they talk about On the 20th Century, when you talk to somebody about On the 20th Century, everybody immediately goes to Kristen.
And, yes, that's true.
And they talk all about Kristen and things like this. And there was a lot of great things that happened in that show other than Kristen, but that's the talk. And when you talk about The King and I, it's just talked about how glorious the production in general is. And I think that that's going to take it. I mentioned on the podcast, I'm not sure, is that the numbers from a business standpoint don't work for this show. It is so big and so large. I don't know how in the world they're making money on it, but they are. And I think that it's very rare you get to see 49, 50 people on stage, and they put just a ton of resources into it, and they held nothing back. And I think that they left it all out on the stage. And On the Town is incredibly wonderful, and On the 20th Century is great, but I think The King and I is going to wing it. So best play: The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime, Disgraced, Hand to God, and Wolf Hall, Parts 1 and 2. So, Michael, why don't you give us a start on this?
You know, I haven't really thought about this category until I'm looking at it just now, and I didn't love any of them as a play. But I think that I would say The Curious Incident is the one that I would choose. I was somewhat disappointed in it, in that I felt that there was going to be some kind of a payoff in the plot that didn't necessarily happen in the way that I expected. But I think it was more about the characters and their relationships, and it was very, very well written in that respect. And also, I guess, it's always the thing that when you talk about best play and best musical, I think there still seems to be some confusion in people's minds as to, well, the award is theoretically for the production. Is that not correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
But some of us tend to put more emphasis on the actual writing. So I guess that partly depends on what one would choose. but I still would choose The Curious Incident. I thought that Disgraced was had good things in it, but I thought it was very overrated. Hand to God also, I think, has a lot of really great moments, but it's also, I think it goes for shock value maybe more than it needs to, and I think that's largely responsible for people's response to it. And Wolf Hall, hard to criticize because it's this marathon event, and I think that it is very good overall, but there are sections of it that I felt really drooped, mainly the first part of the second this first half of the second part, or the first part of the second half. So yeah, Curious Incident is my choice.
Peter. Mine too. I do believe this is going to win. Wolf Hall has been somewhat disappointing, though. If it does win, maybe they'll paint the sign over the Winter Garden saying "Best Play." Who knows? That could very well happen.
Too late
well.
For that.
Yeah. James has been talking about a Hand to God march. A groundswell. So who knows? But Curious Incident also has that British pedigree, and Tonys tend to award the British pedigree whenever it can. So I think it's going to be a Curious Incident.
So I'm split between Curious Incident and Hand to God. I think either one of them can win. I'm going to go with Curious Incident and the Dog in the Nighttime, but the Hand to God Tony campaign far outstrips what the Curious Incident folks are doing. And I also wanted to mention that I really liked Disgraced, and I hope that it gets picked up in many, many regional theaters this year.
It will.
I think that it's if it were running, I think it would be doing. I think that they would be more in the running right now. Mm-hmm.
Well, it won the Pulitzer, didn't it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's that. So, and Wolf Hall, I agree with Michael. There was really great stuff, and some parts it really dragged, and. Mm-hmm. And it's a very ambitious undertaking of, Nicholas Nickleby proportions.
Yeah.
All right. So Best Musical. Mm-hmm. The four nominees are An American in Paris, Fun Home, Something Rotten, ! And The Visit. So Peter, what is going to win?
It's going to be An American in Paris, because of the surprise, factor, 12 nominations tell us that the committee certainly thought it was worthwhile. The show that came out of nowhere also has the benefit of a title that everybody knows. The other three don't have that. And as a result, we're talking about the touring possibilities. This is the show that will bring the most pleasure to the people who are in Philly, Boston, and Baltimore. So I do believe it's going to be An American Paris. I would prefer to see either of the other three win. Again, Something Rotten, starting from scratch, that means a lot to me. The Visit, I think, is a quality work, and certainly Fun Home is an amazingly quality, wonderful piece of writing, and very well done. So no matter what name is called, when that little folder is open, I'm going to say fine, because I do believe that American in Paris will bring a lot of pleasure to a lot of people, even if it wasn't something that gave me nonstop pleasure. But I like it or not, I think it's going to be An American in Paris.
Michael.
And so, Peter, you don't necessarily – you wouldn't be upset if it won on the basis of the fact that it's got old songs in it.
No. I always prefer, of course, an original score, and the other three, of course, have that. But and I'm not going to say, well, because Crazy for You won, therefore, there's a precedent. I understand the logic of voting for An American in Paris. I think that's what I'm really saying.
Yeah, and it isn't it fascinating, as we've already discussed, you never know. I mean, Gigi is also a title that everyone knows.
And Gigi opened 4 days before An American in Paris. You would think that they would have canceled each other out, both Parisian shows, both music, all that kind of business. You know,
well, in that case, I think it's because one is so far better than the other.
Of course. But the point is, you know, all of us at the beginning of the season, we heard these two shows were happening. We didn't give them a thought because they really seemed like all
champions.
Yeah. You know, I'll be the first to admit it. And aside from Kevin McInerney, I don't know anybody who said American in Paris was going to amount to anything. And he credit to him, one of the smartest minds of the business to begin with. But he really had his finger on the pulse with this one. I mean, he was saying it all along. But that's the only human being I know who said anything about American in Paris being anything remotely successful. And so.
Yes, and I can confirm because he said that to me, too.
Did he? Oh, okay, good.
And yes, one could argue that since there is a separate award for the score, that it would be okay for An American in Paris to win as the overall experience.
Well, what's your choice?
My choice is I can't choose between Fun Home and Something Rotten because it's like trying to choose between eating a piece of pastry and a steak. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, they're just so different. They're both wonderful. The Visit, I do like the material, but I think it has been ill-served by this production.
So I'm going to go with Something Rotten. I think that Rotten is going to gain some momentum and win this Best Musical category, although I would not be surprised if Peter's correct and American Paris wins. So we will see. For our listeners, we are not going to record next Sunday because why would you do that? It's the Tony Awards are next Sunday night. So what we're going to do is we're going to record Monday night and the show will be released on Tuesday afternoon or evening with a recap of what has happened next Sunday at the Tony Awards. So before we get into trivia, I want to remind listeners that you can subscribe to these broadcasts by going to the front page of BroadwayRadio.com. There's a subscribe link. That way, each and every time we have a new episode of This Week on Broadway, it'll be automatically downloaded to iTunes for you. Of course, you don't have to listen to us in iTunes. You can listen to us in many other ways. One of the ways is the Stitcher app, which is an application for your iPhone, your BlackBerry, your Android device, and get us streamed directly to you. Broadway World Radio plays us Wednesdays at noon, Thursdays at 7 p.m., and Saturdays at 2 p.m., and contact information for Peter, Michael, and me can be found at BroadwayRadio.com, as well as links to some of the things we've talked about today, although we have some links to the Something Rotten stuff, but there's a list of the choices that we've made for our predictions there this week. So our question, our trivia question last week, Peter, why don't you give us the answer to that?
Well, what I'm going to say is that a lot of people had a very good guess because the question was, what show, when it went into rehearsals, halved its title, actually cut its title in half, used only 50% of it. So so many people wrote in and said, well, Pippin, because Stephen Schwartz wrote that show when he was in college, and then it became Pippin. Well, yes, that's true, and certainly I cannot deny that. But when Pippin was optioned for Broadway by Stuart Ostrow, it was already Pippin. So I was talking about something that was a little closer to The Wire, and the answer to that is another show from that decade, a Tony-winning show, the only show so far to win a Best Musical Tony based on a Best Oscar-winning film. That may change next Sunday. I was looking for Applause, Applause. That was I still vividly remember seeing the three sheets in the Mechanic Theater in Baltimore, God rest its soul, and seeing Applause, Applause on that three sheet. So really, that came very close to be calling Applause, Applause. And my guess is the reason it was changed is because that's an expression used as faint praise when people do something and you say, Applause, Applause, you know, and I think that's the reason why they changed it. Somebody said, look, you know, that's really, you know, a derogatory thing. So so that's the answer. And Robert Lobiondo was the only one to guess that, though.
Wow.
Really honorable mention to everybody else, God love you, who said Pippin, and I understand why you did.
Well, I was thinking of that, Peter, because I usually hear Applause, 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 but I sometimes hear it in like rehearsals. Situations like that.
Right.
And I usually hear it three, not two.
I see.
A friend of mine who also guessed Pippin, which several people guessed, and then I said, well, no, it's not that. But he said, I wonder if there would ever be a show called Promises, 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 Promises.
Promises, right, yeah.
What a cast and applause. Lauren Bacall, Lynn Cario, Bonnie Franklin, Penny Fuller, just to start with a full dance.
Leroy Reams giving
Leroy Reams,
finest performances I have ever seen in a musical. So, yes, Leroy Reams as well. I do not want him forgotten.
And a dancing and singing chorus.
Oh, yeah.
At the Palace Theater.
Last show that we had a dancing and singing chorus that were denoted like that?
Might even be it.
So the twist on this week's trivia is that Michael is going to give the trivia question. So Michael, take it away.
Yeah, I came up with one. I guess there could conceivably be more than one answer to this one. But as you know, I guess we would learn something if that's the case. So here it goes. All right. What performer who has appeared on Broadway this season performed in both a musical and a play during the same season some years ago within the space of less than 3 months?
Okay. So if you have the answer to that question, email us at trivia@broadwayradio.com. That way all three of us will get it. We'll be able to suss out all the different answers that could come in that direction. So on behalf of Michael Portantiere and Peter Felicia, this is James Marino saying thanks so much for listening to Broadway Radio's This Week on Broadway. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you. I like that one too. Thank you, God. And if you wanna see perfection,